All right, hello, my name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
Grateful to be sober, grateful to be here. I want to thank you, Mark, for asking me to participate in my recovery. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being asked. You know, you get the call, I'm like, oh, I'd love to, you know, drive out to, where are we, Lancaster?
Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, sounds great, you know. And then I'm like getting there and I'm like, oh my God, it's a, beyond any lengths, I think, you know, an hour and a half. And then I get a new guy in the car. Thank you, Albert. I get him in the car. He talked the whole way. You know what I mean? This is great. You know what I mean? So thank you for that. You know, I love you. This guy, he's on fire for AA. You know, come to Thursday night meeting. And he, where's Albert? And he's talking to all the new guys outside, you know. And that's the kind of people I want to hang out with. You know, the guys that are talking to new guys and on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can feel the energy in this group. You know, I got out of my car and I could hear the chatter, man. It was like that sound at the bar. He rock up to the man, that chatter, and he knew that was going on inside. And you guys had something that I wanted, and I didn't know what it was, you know. Got out of the car, I was like, oh, I want to be part of them, you know. And I know that from the structure of the group, you know, the safety of the group, the fellowship of the group, I could feel it. And I thank you for your welcoming me into this group. I don't know. I real quick, my sponsor's Mike S. He's from Riverside. I have a home group. It's the South Coast Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on a Wednesday night at 7:30 in Laguna Beach. They call it the Gucci meeting. They used to, like, dress up. You know, they call it the Walmart meeting now. We dress down, but, you know. But I was taught to wear a collared shirt. You know, so I still got my collared shirt. And all my sponsees, you know, anyways. But, you know, and my sponsor, my home group, my sobriety date, yeah, October 23rd, 2002. You know, and that date is very special to me. And I didn't know that I was going to be sober on that date. I really didn't, you know. And those three things keep me in good stead. And if you're new, I want to welcome you. The two friends that identified as being new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that I say something tonight that says, you know what, maybe I'll come back to AA tomorrow. You know, I know that I don't have the power today to get anyone sober, and I don't have the power to get anyone drunk, you know. And I love seeing the kids here. I love when kids are in AA. You know, I think it's always funny hearing the rules, you know, keep your kid next to you, you know. And I think it's funny. I always laugh, and the reason I laugh is because I grew up in AA. You know, my mom was being sentenced to prison for 10 years ago, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. She's the kind of alcoholic that gets pulled over for a DUI, and she jumps out and tries to beat the cop up, you know, which I think is pretty gangster. You know, I love telling that story, you know. And she's being sentenced to prison for 10 years, and in the middle of the sentencing, the judge is like, or you can go to AA. And she sat there and thought about it, 10 years in prison or AA, you know. And the attorney's like, go to AA, idiot, you know, and he raised her hand for her. And my mom's a blackout drinker, which means I'll never know who my dad is, you know. You know, she even knows she was pregnant till she was in labor, you know, which is a cool story to tell, you know. And she thought she was constipated, so she called 911. I guess that's what you do when you're constipated, you call 911. And she gave birth in her apartment, and the paramedic was holding her, holding me. And the paramedic's like, you need to name him, you know. And my mom was like, name what? Yeah. Right? My mom's name is Patty, so she named me Patrick, so she wouldn't forget my name, you know. You know, but my mom, I was 11 months old, and my mom was being sentenced to prison, and it took her another 11 months until she went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she brought me to AA, she brought me to the Canyon Club, and I'm so grateful for the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you brought my mom in, and you brought her all the way in, and you sat her all the way down, and you took me at the door, and you took me off to some little room, and you played with me so that my mom could recover, you know. And I literally grew, as I got older and can run around, you know what I'm saying? I could recite chapter 5. I could recite the 12 traditions. End of the meeting, I was like, keep coming back, you know. The old timers are like, we're saving this seat right here for you, kid. You know, I had no clue. But me and my little friends from AA would ding-dong ditch the neighborhood. And we'd run and hide in the meeting, hide amongst the AAs, you know. And some guy would chase us after us. And the guy would be like, where are them damn kids? And you guys are like, there's no kids here. He taught us all how to con and lie and manipulate, you know. And You know, but my mom and the women would get the woman and they'd take the newcomer and they'd take her to Denny's. I fell asleep every night at Denny's, you know, and they would drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and they would 12-step the newcomer, you know, and they let her go at 2:15 in the morning after the bar closed. And I know that we went home at 2:15 because that's when I'd wake up at Denny's and get in the car, you know, to go home. And the only reason I tell you that is because if knowledge had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd never taken my first drink. You know, if knowledge had nothing, you know, I mean, I, my mom would be like, here's Uncle Lynn. Lynn Wilder was my basketball coach. Those that know a bunch of old timers, he's my basketball coach, you know, and some weirdo from AA would take me fishing, you know, and here, meet Uncle Tom, you know, and go weird, you know, fishing with Tom, you know, and, you know, but I grew up around here, you know, if love had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd have never taken my first drink. You know, the love that I feel in this room tonight, I have a lot of friends, you know, a lot of, and I feel it, you know, I could feel the love right now, you know. And if love had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd never taken my first drink, you know. I remember being a little boy looking outside my mom's apartment window, wondering if my dad was ever coming home, you know. And I remember being a little boy, I'd sit there and watch all the car come down the street, and the car would never turn into my mom's apartment. And I'd sit there terrified, you know, just wanting to meet my dad. And I would fall asleep, you know, was my bedroom window, but my mom's apartment, you know. And I remember being a little boy saying that if I don't have a dad, then there is no God, you know. I signed off to the God idea a long time ago. You know, and I've learned that when I got here that I have a disease of perception. My perception is that I'm not loved. My perception is I'm unlovable. My perception is I'm not good enough, right? But what's surrounding me isn't what goes on inside my mind, you know? And, you know, as a little kid, my mom did the best she could. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm a right fielder on the baseball team. Are there right fielders here? No one's going to, okay, good. Good looking out. I had a couple losers with me, you know what I mean? Because we all know it's the loser position, you know what I'm saying? You know, I hate a little league. I'm out there resentful at, you know, the pitcher, usually the coach's son, you know what I mean? I was like, look at that kid, you know. You know, the ball's never hit out here. I'm like, look, you know, wandering around the field. I'm looking for the dandelion. Somebody told me if I found one of those, I could blow them all off. I could have a wish, you know. And I'm in left field, and the coach is like, the other side of the field, kid. I'm like, okay, you know, there's a game going on. I'm like wishing for a different life out in left field, you know. And one time I was on second base, and how I got there was terrified. I was like, oh, my God, where am I? I was already so self-centered long before I ever took my first drink. I didn't know if I had the right jersey on, the right shoes, the belt. You know, kid cracked a line drive, and I ran back to first base, you know. And, dude, it was like a triple play in the wrong direction, man. And little poopy pants back to the dugout, you know. And as I'm going in the dugout, all my friends are running out. What I heard my friends say that day is, you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good. Now, none of them said that, right? But that was the voice in my head long before I ever took my first drink. Failure, loser, you're no good. I remember looking at my mom, and she was in the stands clapping. You know what I mean? So proud of her kid, you know? And not proud because I got a triple play in the wrong direction, man. My mom was proud because it took me an hour to get out of that stupid car, to go to that stupid field, to play that stupid game one more time. And I remember looking at my mom that day saying, if I only had a dad, that had never happened. I built a belief system that was going to separate me from you long before I ever took my first drink, you know? And, you know, I'm also a nail biter, you know what I mean? I'm nervous. I got the nervous disposition the big book talks about. I'm anxious, you know what I mean? Like that bouncy leg right there, you know what I mean? I got one left. I'm like over here flicking it, you know? And hopefully no one knows. I'll get it later, you know? And I'm also... I can feel it right now, you know what I mean? I'm also a bedwetter. Any other bedwetters here? You know, no one's going to admit that one. Not in Lancaster. Same right fielder. Good looking out, you know. Dude, my mom, I get an invite for a sleepover, and I'm terrified. No, I don't want to go. And my mom's like, oh, my God, he has friends, you know. And I go to the sleepover, you know what I mean. And I stay, don't go to sleep, and I fall asleep. And I wake up in the morning, and I peed my friend's couch cushion, you know. And I'm flipping it over, hoping no one knows. And I know shame and guilt on a deep, deep level long before I took my first drink of alcohol, you know? You know, it don't make me an alcoholic, man. Just an awkward kid, man. But what I'm about to tell you make me alcoholic. And I didn't know I was alcoholic when I got here. You know what I mean? And I would go to Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom would go to AA, you know? And I go to AA, and I'm sitting in the back of the room where all the newcomers are, you know? And they go, are there any newcomers here? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm new, and... They go, what's your name? And I go, my name is Pat, and I'm an addict. Not an AA, or there's an addict in our room. Let's get him out of here, you know what I mean? He's going to infest AA, you know? He's going to talk about drugs, oh, my God, you know? And I'm like, what? Like, I don't understand what's going on, you know? Like, I'm not supposed to say that. I'm not supposed to, oh, and I, one more time, I'm not supposed to be here either. And I leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and I slam the door, and I close it, slam it, man, because I want to piss the old guy off, you know? No one ever followed me out and said, hey, kid, here's a big book. Take this home or to your bush or wherever you live in. You know, maybe you might have alcoholism. And I go out there and I die, you know. And my mom would say, go to AA. And I'd come to AA and I wouldn't identify because I didn't want the judgment in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And if you're new here tonight and you didn't identify, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Safe place here. Alcoholics Anonymous is a safe place. And I leave, you know, and I come back and I'd hear some things around here. You know, I'd hear how you drink, and I would think, I kind of drink like that guy, you know? Some lady would talk about some crazy thinking. I was like, oh, my God, I think like that lady, you know? And they said, are there any newcomers? I raised my hand, and my name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Ah, put $2 in the basket. They're all pointing at me. Some are sicker than others, you know? And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to identify right. I don't know how to do anything right anywhere I go. And one more time, I'm an alcoholic, so I'm just getting your judgment for not knowing how to identify around here. And I go out there and I die. And no one ever followed me out and said, hey, kid, you want to go to Denny's after? And let me tell you my story. And I'm so grateful we're a storytelling society. We come here and we tell our stories. You know, and through your story, you gave me the language to tell my own story. And I'll be forever grateful for your story. You know what I mean? I remember when I was brand new, you know, this lady, she was Grateful Angie. I'm Grateful Angie. And I thought, she's smoking weed for sure. You know what I mean? Grateful Bud, you know? But I got something. She was crazy. I remember telling my sponsor, man, she's crazy, you know? And he goes, do you relate to her thinking? I was like, absolutely. He goes, you're crazy too, you know? And, so I would go in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I called my mom that day and I was sitting at Charlie Street, man, I had a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who took me through this book right here. And he took me word for word and line for line, and he turned statements into questions. Right? There's a line in there that talks about restless, irritable, and discontent. He's like, naturally. I'm like, dude, I take alcohol away. He goes, you're not alcoholic, but you take alcohol away. I go, yeah. What happens? I go, dude, I get angry. He goes, so restless, irritable, and discontent is baseline. For you, anger. I'm like, yeah. And he talks about this till I can get the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from a few drinks. And he asked me, turn that into a question. He said, when you put alcohol into your body, what is the effect produced for you? And so I started to tell him. First time I drank alcohol, I was 9 years old. I was at an AA meeting of all places with my mom. Me and my little friends were rip-roaring around AA. These kids were 14. They pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. We were in the parking lot of this hospital, and they pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And what happened for me was I knew that if I didn't drink it that day, those kids weren't going to like me. And the bottle got to me. I took a pull off that bottle. I hated the taste. It was disgusting. I spit it out, and I was overcome with fear. And what happened for me was that fear went to the worst case scenario. I was never going to be like the rest of my life. And the bottle came around the second time. I got that bottle and was excited about having it. And the excitement for me wasn't that I was going to get drunk. The excitement for me was that Poopy Pants was going to have some friends. I took a pull off that bottle. I talked myself into holding that tequila down. And I can tell you the exact effect alcohol has on this alcoholic body. In that moment, all that fear went away. Like, in that moment, I felt like I connected to those kids, man. In that moment, I felt a part of, you know. And I didn't know that at 9 years old. I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I looked at the effect produced that alcohol gave me, you know. And I slowly stopped coming to AA with my mom. And by the time I was 11 years old, this kid handed me a joint, man. I was like, you know what I mean? This little elf chasing around the park. I hallucinated for like 2 hours at the time of my life. And one more time, I equated that authority are a bunch of liars because nothing bad happened to me. And by the time I was in high school, now I grew up in Mission Viejo, California. I don't know if you're familiar with Mission Viejo, California, but it's 1990, you know, 91, 92. Now remember, I'm Poopy Pants, smell like syrup kid, you know, right fielder, you know. But I'm listening to gangster rap, you know, and so I got size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up. I got a 5XL sweatshirt on. I'm drinking St. Ives out of a brown paper bag. I'm pouring beer in the curb for the dead homies, you know, and I don't have any dead homies, but I'm getting ready for some, you know, and You know, my friends came up, they were hungry, and I created a plan that fast, and they robbed the pizza man with my stun gun, and that wasn't part of the plan. But the next day, you know, there was a sheriff and a detective at my school, and I didn't want to be a rat, so I took the fall in a crime my friends committed, you know, because your approval of me was more important than anything else in my life. And I went to juvenile hall at 16 years old to make me alcoholic as a consequence of my disease at 16 years old. But I was on house arrest, and a little gang came to see me, and they brought me a 40 and some weed and some Indian ink and a needle and thread, and they're like, you need to give yourself a tattoo for your crazy life. So I gave myself three dots on my ankle for Mi Vida Loca, you know, in Mission Viejo. Ghetto, you know. What happened was I leaned back and I was like, orale, Holmes, you know. If you're new, this is called delusional. Like, I don't know about you, but alcohol gives me power. You know what I mean? Alcohol turns poopy pants into a gang member like that, you know? You know what I mean? Like, alcohol is a solution for my life at 17, though I don't know it. You know, I'm already out full-blown alcoholic at 17, though I don't know it. And my mom finds a bottle of tequila and a bag of weed in her house. Now, my mom's like 16 years sober. My mom's sponsoring thousands of women. My mom's flying all over the country speaking. And her kid's an absolute wreck. You know, and my mom has a sober household, and women from AA are coming there. And my mom finds this, and she's like, you can't drink in my house. Like, this is a sober household. And, like, I don't know how you hear that, but I hear you need to hide it better, you know? And so I hide it better for a month or whatever. I'm coming out of a blackout with my pants and my ankles peeing all over my mom's fish tank. You know what I mean? Completely disrespectful to my mom, to her recovery, to anything in my life. I dropped out of high school at ninth grade. You know, and my mom says, you can't drink in my house. I hear, hide it better, right? Like, stopping isn't an option at 17 years old. And I hide it better for a month. I come out of a blackout. I'm standing at the door. My mom had a bottle of tequila in her hand. And my mom looked at me and she said, you're kicked out. I was 17 years old. I went into my mom's house, into my bedroom. I packed my backpack and I walked by my mom and I looked at her right in the eyes and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. I watched my mom's heart break right in that moment. Like, I don't know how you deal with shame and guilt, but this alcoholic arrogance, man, I puffed my chest, I grabbed my mom by the collar, I slammed her against the wall, F you, I hate you, you're never going to see me again. I left that night, I went to an abandoned house where I was getting loaded, I took my first hit of crack cocaine at 17 years old. And the only reason I tell you that is it's a progression of my disease, man. What my mom said to me that night, she said, you can stay here and be sober or go out on the streets and get loaded, but you need to make a choice. What alcoholism told me was that I was kicked out of the house. My mom was my hero. My mom was my best friend. Alcohol told me to put my hands on my mom that night. Completely powerless over alcohol in my life, though I can't see it. And I didn't call my mom for a year and a half because I was going to make her pay for that decision. And the first call that my mom got, I got hit by a truck. I was in San Francisco, and I called my mom, collect, man. And I said, Mom, I got hit by a truck, and I don't know what to do. And my mom said, freaked out. And she's like, oh, my God, well, you know, how can I help you? And I said, I got to go to the hospital, and I don't know how I'm going to pay for the hospital. And she said, well, why don't you just send me an address, and I'll send them a check. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 Mom, they need cash. She's like, how am I going to give you cash? I'm in Orange County. You're in San Francisco. I said, there's a thing called Western Union right down the street from your work. My mom ran down there, wired me $150 just like that. And a week later, Clemzy got in another accident. She wired me another $150. And for the next 8 years, my mom would wire me at least $150 once a week. My mom was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and she'd wire me the money. And by the time I'm 25 years old, I'm a panhandler in San Francisco. I'm a tenderloin alcoholic. Anyone familiar with the TL? Couple heads bobbing. Okay, I'm an Eddie and Jones character. You know what I'm saying? And I'm panhandling. If you're a panhandler, you know the desperation and loneliness of a panhandler, man. People walk by you, look right through you like you don't even exist, man. Scum of the earth, just you know, spit on you, man. And I'm sitting there, I'm trying to create, get some kind of hustle going on, man. I want to kill myself, man. I'm desperate and I'm alone and I'm suicidal. I'm 25 years old and I'm at the cable car at Powell and Market Street. And all of a sudden this girl started talking to me and I don't even know what I'm saying, but she moved me in her house, you know. Just like that, you know, she brought me home and she detoxed me, you know what I'm saying? And I fell in love 3 days sober, man, in love, full blown in love. And she went and got me clothes, man. Now I got clean clothes and I got a place to live and I got a girlfriend. And normal living is the solution for my problems, right? Normal living. I got a girlfriend. I got a place to live. Never felt so good in my life. I'm in love. Happy, joyous, and free, and 45 days sober. She's like, you need to get a job, you know? And I thought this was for fun and for free. What do you mean? I'm a taker, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know, right? Like, I'm not dumb. I'm not going to lose the house and the girlfriend. So I go get a job, and I got a job in the Presidio, if you're familiar with San Francisco, the Presidio. Well, wealthy. And I got a job at the YMCA at an after-school program for elementary school kids. The assistant director. 45 days sober. I got the best job I've ever had in my life. Normal living. Got a girlfriend, got a place to live, happy, joyous, and free. I thank my girlfriend. Thank you for my beautiful life. I show up day one. There's 200 kids. They love Pado. I can balance a chair on my chin. I can balance a ladder on my chin. I'm running around playing, you know. And I go home. I kiss my girlfriend. Thank you for my life. And I believe it. And I wake up in the morning and I show up to that elementary school and this little second grader goes, hey, Pat, come over here. I want you to meet my mom. And I go meet his mom. He goes, Mom, this is my best friend, Pat. I got a best friend now. You know what I'm saying? Normal live. And I go thank my girlfriend. I wake up day three. I got my little lunch whistling to work. She made it for me. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man, I'm in love. I got the beautiful life and I'm pushing that second grader on a swing, man. Not a cloud in the horizon, not a San Francisco wind, and the thought crossed my mind that a bag of heroin would be a good idea. And I came to, overdosed in that elementary school bathroom. And the director and that second grader were the ones that found me on that toilet. Second grader found me on that toilet. And I come to, and the boy's crying. And the director says, you have 10 minutes to get off this property. I'm calling the cops. And I looked at that little boy and he said, Pat, what happened? And for the first time in my life, I couldn't explain why it happened. I could always tell you that it was my daddy issues, my mommy issues, my depression, my anxiety. And that day I couldn't tell you, man. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. And she sent me to treatment center. And what happened for me in treatment was the greatest thing ever. I fell in love, you know. And we had the same sobriety date, you know what I mean? Dude, it was God's will, you know what I'm saying? And so I had to go do a 9-month program. And so I wrote my girlfriend a note, you know what I mean? I was like, where should we go to sober living? She's like, Hawaii. I'm like, this is so romantic, you know? And I got on the plane to go to Hawaii with my sober girlfriend. To go to sober living. And the flight attendant asked me, what would you like to drink? My consequences are related to my heroin use. Identified my alcoholism at 17. So you can order a Heineken. I ordered a Heineken, 12 or 13 Heinekens. Later, I land in Hawaii. Now, the old timers used to always say, it's the first drink to get you drunk, kid. And I would think, dude, you need to drink through that, old man. You know what I'm saying? But I got off the plane and I knew exactly what those old guys were saying. It was the first Heineken that got me drunk. It was the first Heineken that I put in that I lost the power of choice. But I didn't know I lost the power of choice, but I knew when I got off the plane, I was done. I got not done getting sober, like done. I had no choice. I was going to drink again. But I sat there that day and I thought about it, sober living or bar, and I contemplated the idea thinking that I have power. I said, I'll go to sober living tomorrow. And I walked in that bar and I ordered another drink, and that girl ended up overdosing and dying and never making it to Hawaii. And my mom went to Al-Anon, which means I'm about to get sober because the money stops coming, you know? Right? I call my mom, I'm like, Mom, I need money. She's like, no. I'm like, what do you mean no? She's like, no's a full sentence. Hang up on me. You know? And I call her back. I'm like, well, Mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. It's all your fault, man. And I hit that guilt button, and my mom will wire me the money. And then I'd call her, and she was going to set a boundary. I'm like, well, if you didn't kick me out of the house, and she'd wire me the money, I'd call and tell her how much I love. My mom said, I'm not sending you any more money. I'll get you a plane ticket back to Los Angeles. Last thing I'm doing. My mom bought me a plane ticket back to L.A., and I got off that plane. I went straight downtown to Skid Row. And I used to say, I lived on Skid Row. I'm here to tell you I survived Skid Row. 3 days before I got sober on the 20th of October, because of my, well, the hustle for me is I sell myself for one more. You know what I mean? I come to, and 3 days late before I got sober, sexually assaulted for the 12th time. And I come out of that motel, man, I'm effing kill myself, man. I can't live like this anymore. I can't imagine my life with or without alcohol. It's 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to jump in front of this box truck, man, when the thought crossed my mind that a bottle of tequila would be a better idea. And wow, my whole body turned. I went to the liquor store. It's 5:30 in the morning. And we know that 30 minutes before the liquor store opens. I know that madness and that terror and that scream and that just yelling at me. And I'm about to snap, man. When the lady at that liquor store opens that door, man, I get this sense of ease and comfort at once, man. And I ran in the liquor store. I got a pint of tequila and went back on the wall. I put half that bottle back. And when I put half that bottle back, all that shame and all that guilt and all that remorse and all that fear went away just like that. And one more time, alcohol saved my life. And then the thought said, drink that second half of that bottle. And I put that second half of that bottle back and I blacked out for 3 days. And I came to 3 days later in Anaheim doing the same thing I did for one more. But that morning, man, I had a spiritual defense that stepped right in between me and that first thought of that first drink, man, because what that voice said, call your mom and ask for help. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. And she said, I can't help you anymore. She said, just stay right where you are, and someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. So if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And I'm so grateful my mom didn't come that day, because I would have manipulated her for 20 more bucks. I can guarantee I wouldn't be standing here tonight. And my mom called every high-profile old-timer in her area to help her kid, and none of them answered. And the guy that answered had a year of sobriety. He was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and he just got off the phone with his doctor that told him he had stage 4 cancer and he had 6 months to live. And he knew that if he didn't treat his alcoholism, he wasn't going to make it 6 months. And he didn't say, have the kid call me. He said, where is he at? And my mom gave him the address of that motel, and he grabbed a new guy because we don't do 12-step calls alone. And he drove down to that motel, and he barged in the front door. He's like, my name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. And he had crazy hair. And I was just like, I was 98 pounds. I was like shaking out of my chair. You know what I mean? The guy was on a walker. He's like, I'm John. I got 90 days sober, you know. And I was just sitting here thinking, these guys are losers, man. Like, these guys are going to help me. And the guy said, come with me, kid. And I got off the bed and I followed that guy to that motel. And I got downstairs to the van. He said, just get in the van, kid. And I got in the van. And if you're new, just get in the car. Something happens in the car, man. And those guys told me their story and I didn't relate to their story. I looked for the differences. They drank. They went to the hospital. Ended up at Charlie Street in Costa Mesa. Low bottom indigent detox. And he knew that I was separating from his story. And he said, Pete, come on over. And Pete waddled up. Pete was tattooed from head to toe. And he said, when you drink, Pete, what happens to you? He goes, I go to prison. I go, I don't go to prison. He goes, where do you go? I go to jail, you know. And Pete goes, oh, great, John, come over here. John, when you drink, what happens to you? He goes, I go to jail. And I was like, hey, me too. And we started talking about Popeye and Sleepy and Orale. War story after war story after war story after war story. And thank God you allowed me to tell my war stories. Because through your war story and my war story, we started to connect. Started to say, hey, me too. That happened to me too. And that happened to me too. And that happened to me too. And the little weasel sponsor came over. I didn't know he was my sponsor. So how do you get a sponsor? He goes, I'm already your sponsor, you know. He goes, when you're in jail, sober, what is the thinking that... I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, like you're sober. You don't want to be drinking. You don't want to go back to jail. No. I make a promise to my mom. I do the H&I. I give my life to some church there. And I'm sitting in the holding tank waiting to get released. And I start having a conversation with myself. He said, what did the conversation say? I said, it always starts off with alcohol is not my problem. This drug is my problem. He goes, what do? I go, I get out of jail. I get a 12-pack of beer. 1, 2, 3. I'm down the street. I meet a new friend. Now we're business partners. He said, what happened? I said, I ended up back in jail. He goes, ah, oh, that's great. What happened that time? I said, I make a promise to my mom. I do the H&I. I go to church. I'm in the holding tank. It's this other drug. Alcohol's never a problem. I drink alcohol. I ended up back in jail. He goes, that's great. What happened that time? I said, I make a promise to my mom. I do the H&I. Boom, and tell him story after story about the insanity of my first drink. And he looked at me and said, if you can concede both propositions, kid, when you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop it to end up in jail. And more importantly, with a sober mind, you have a mind that's driving you back to the thing that's going to kill you. He said, you might be alcoholic. And he left me in that silence like that. And for the first time in my life, I couldn't lie to Pat Ochoa. For the first time in my life, I conceded to my innermost self, man. I looked at him, I said, I'm alcoholic. I was so surprised. I was like, I'm alcoholic. And he lit up like a chandelier. He's like, I got a new guy, you know. I was like, whoa, bro. He's like, yeah, God is the answer. And I was like, not this guy, you know what I mean? I'm not going door-to-door selling literature, bro. You know what I mean? I don't want a bobblehead, a Bill W., you know what I mean? Like, I'm good, you know. And he said, Pat, he's like, let me just tell you. He said, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the greatest day of my life was when I walked my daughter down the aisle. I had joy for my daughter. I was like, what? Like, joy for? He's like, yeah, every Saturday I watch my grandkids play baseball and I have happiness for my grandkids. Like, joy and happiness for others was like, whoa, that I wanted. God, I didn't want. I came to believe in that. I came to believe that I too could have joy and happiness for others if I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't believe in God until I was 8, 9 years sober. I don't think God cares what your intentions are. I think God cares what your actions are. Because I got on my knees. I read the thing. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, do with me. There was no heart. There was nothing. But God heard that prayer. And I hadn't gotten to the seventh step. You know what I mean? I'm a people pleaser. He didn't take that character defect away. And so I was doing all this stuff with my sponsor because I wanted him to like me. I wrote a 4-step. I did an inventory. 4 days sober, I was already on my 9th step. And I had to go do to a sober living. So it's only 10 days free. And he goes, you got to go to sober living. I go, no, I got to go to the Salvation Army. He goes, why? I go, because I have a warrant. He goes, great, we're going to turn you in tomorrow. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa, bro. I was like, no, I'm not doing it. He goes, remember, you said you're willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. I didn't remember saying it, but I guess I did, you know. And he goes, everything's going to be all right. He goes, you got God in your life. And I was like, remember, I don't believe in God. He goes, you can borrow mine, you know. And he gave me a suit, and he took me to that judge, and the judge sentenced me to 3.5 years in prison. Cuffed up, man, I'm going down the holding tank, and I'm like, God, man, I said, why? I didn't even realize I was praying. Man, why'd you trust that guy? You never trusted men your whole life, man. One more time, you put trust in another man, another man's failed you. Like, your dad failed you, every coach failed you, every mentor. And one more time, you believed another man failed you. He said everything's going to be all right. You're going to prison. And I got on my knees, and I was like, God, I don't believe that you exist, but this old man, John, told me to pray. Get me the heck out of here, will you? Amen. And John's God don't work either, because now I'm on the bus. You know what I'm saying? And I'm telling you my story in the rearview mirror, man. I can't see God in the windshield. I'm not like, oh my God, I can see how God is driving me through all this. Nah. I got to look in the rearview mirror. And so I'm telling you my story. But what happened was I was sitting there, I was contemplating with God. Man, for the first time in my life, I want to be sober. Man, for the first time in my life, I really mean this. And I'm going to prison and I don't understand. And I promise if I could just help other people, I'll do that. And the engine started and the door closed and I'm just like, man, what the heck, you know? And the door opened and the guard's on standing up there and she's like, Ochoa? And the three of us raised our hand, you know? And yeah, then she's like, Patrick? I was like, that's me. And the other two dudes are pissed, you know what I mean? I got off there. I went up in front of the judge and the judge said, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm going to give you another chance. He said, there's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he pointed to my goofy spot. He goes, that guy's been fighting for you all day to get out. And if you're new, that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous for one night. We fight for each other's lives one day at a time, man. That old idea that we read in chapter 5, we had to let go of the old ideas. The results were nil until we... That was an old idea that men always failed me. And through that little experience and many, many more, man, I know that the men in my life are there to support and love me on a daily basis. And it was just one of those little marks. And the guy that answered the phone, the Salvation Army, man, had gotten sober. And he became a counselor. And my sponsor said, I got this kid, Pat Ochoa, who needs a bed. And when I went to the Salvation Army, I was met by Tim P. And Tim P. was a guy I used to get loaded with. and see God's working in my life, though I can't see it. God doesn't care. And we were doing all kinds of service work around here. You know what I mean? Kind of like this group. A lot of service work, huh? I asked my sponsor, I go, why do I got to do all this service work, man? These guys, there's these other groups, they don't do nothing. I got to do. He looked at me and said, your whole life you've been a taker, kid. He said, what we're going to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous is turn you into a giver. I thought, oh, man, I'll be the Dalai Lama one day, you know what I mean? And then I was complaining because, like, people were falling in love, and I was like, this is weird. I want a girlfriend, you know? And finally I got one. I don't know how that happened, but I got one, and she got pregnant, and I don't know how that happened either, but the women in AA taught me how to be a dad. I didn't know how to be a dad. Your pain, you would share with me that the father of your child didn't show up for child support. The father of your child didn't show up for visitation. And through your pain, I learned how to show up for my son. And one day I was at my house, before I put him on my head, he didn't cry up there. So we cruised around all the time with my kid on my head all the time. Because I can't deal with crying. And I stood up in my house and I put my son's head on my head and I put his head right into a ceiling fan. I was like, ah. My sponsee was there. My sponsee grabbed my kid, and I went to the back to my closet, the back room, and I got on my knees. I was like, God, I don't believe that you exist. Old man John told me to pray. I put my son's head in a ceiling fan. What do I do? Amen. And I heard a voice. It was like, you need to call the doctor, dude. I was like, whoa. God's talking right to me, you know what I mean? And so I called the doctor, and the doctor, you know, he told me what to do, and I grabbed my kid, and there was nothing wrong with him. He just had a little bump on his head. You know what I mean? But what happened for me in that moment was that I cared more about another human being than I cared about myself. Selfishness and self-centeredness walked through the door on the 23rd of October of 2002. Continuing to show up for that stupid literature commitment that I don't want to go to. Man, I got to be the secretary again, complaining all the way. God be the greeter again, all the way. All those little actions led to a point where I cared more about another human being than I cared about myself. That man didn't lie to me, you know. And I got asked to talk in Portland, and I went out of town. And let me back up. That young man, when he was second grade, he was terrified. He was scared to eat. And I was restless, irritable, and discontent with him, you know. And 3 days of not eating, I had an intuitive thought that said, pray with your kid. And I said a prayer with my kid, and I had another intuitive thought that said, feed him softer food. And he worked through that fear. And then he was afraid to sleep at night, and I argued with him for 3 days. And then the third day, I had an intuitive thought that said, pray with your kid. And in the middle of the prayer, I had another thought that said, why don't you read a book with your kid? And I read a book with him, and every night we started praying. At mealtime, we started praying at night. And then he went to school, and then he told me he was afraid to go to school because he was going to die at school. And I thought, now you're manipulating me, you know what I mean? But I have a confident trust born of experience that shows when I get restless, irritable, and discontent with my son, it doesn't make it easier. But when I pray with him, it makes things seem to be a little easier. So we said a prayer, and I said, son, when your dad's afraid, what does your dad do? He said, you go to AA and you be a service. I said, how can you be a service at school? He goes, I don't know, I'll go find out. And he went to school, and I went to work, and I went and picked him up, and he had a smile from ear to ear. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, you won't believe it, Dad. He goes, at lunchtime, I saw a kid way on the playground, and I went to go introduce myself, and I said, hi, I'm Eden, and the kid's name was Chris. And I said, why was Chris crying? He said, Chris was crying because he found out that his parents were getting a divorce, and he was going to have to stay half-time at his mom's and half-time at his dad's. And my son had been living that way for the last 7 years. And he said, Dad, I shared with him how I've been able to get through that and the things that I do to get through that. And see, my son learned how to get through his fears through prayer and service. And I went to go speak in Portland, and I got back, and I, you know, you ever travel, maybe delays, you know what I mean? It's annoying, you know what I mean? And I go pick up my son, and I get in the car. He goes, Dad, did you forget to pray? I was like, what? And so he said a prayer, and he said, God, please soften my dad's heart so that he's not kind to me. And we went and got some food, and we pull into my apartment complex, and we go to get out of the car, and this girl's punching car windows, and she's effing this, and her boyfriend that, and I said, God, please direct my next action. And my son looked at me, and he goes, Dad, what do? I go, just go inside and separate the food. I'll be in there in a minute. And the girl came walking up to me, and she said, my boyfriend took my phone. Can I borrow your phone? God answered my prayer. And I gave her the phone, and she calls her dad, and I said, God, please direct my next action. And she said, my dad wants to talk to you. Will you talk to my dad? God answered my prayer. But if I don't lean into God, I can't see how God's working in my life. And I got on the phone with the dad, and the dad said, I don't know you, but I don't know what else to do. And my daughter's obviously hurt. Can you take my daughter inside your house and take care of her till I get there? He said, take me an hour to drive from Temecula. God answered my prayer. I knew exactly what to do. I said, absolutely. I'll bring her in my house. I'll clean her up and I'll take care of her. And I brought her in, and I brought her into my apartment, and I took her to the bathroom, and she had cut her arms up and down with this knife. I'd gotten the knife away from her, and she was bleeding out her arms, and I cleaned her up, and I said, I'll be right back. And I went into the kitchen, into the dining room, where my son had separated the food, and he had separated the food into three plates. He said, Dad, you think she wants to eat? I said, I don't know. Why don't you go ask her, you know? Yeah, go ask her, you know what I mean? And so we walked in the bathroom, and he goes, every time I'm sad, he goes, I pray, will you pray with me? And he's holding her hands and he's praying with this young girl. And I walk over there and I look around, man, and I watch my kid, and I just start to cry, man. I start to cry, and my tears are gratitude for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for what you taught me. You taught me to continue to show up for the literature commitment and the secretary and the greeter. And I took that and I brought it into my home, and my son had been watching me. And then he said, amen. And then he said, every time I'm done praying, I meditate. We meditate. She was stuck. She had nowhere to go. You know what I mean? He's breathing God in, breathing fear out, breathing God in, breathing fear out, man. He came over to the dining room table where we're sitting, and he thanked God for allowing us to be a service. And I get the call from her dad, and her dad comes, and with me, he goes, I want to go with you, Dad. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, let's go, you know. And the 64 Impala rolls up, gangster straight, get out of the car, man. And my son, my little timid, scared little boy, walks right up to the guy and goes, hi, I'm Eden. And he says, we want to thank you for allowing us to be a service to your daughter. And he turned around and he walked away. I look at the guy, I'm like, yeah, what he said, you know what I'm saying? And then I looked at my son, and I wanted to ask him to be my sponsor, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? I walked out, you know, and that little boy, that same little boy, man, he graduated high school last year with a 4.5 grade point average. I had to ask him, I go, how'd you get the 0.5 extra? He goes, honors, Dad, you know? And so he applied for three colleges. He's a fashion and design major. He applied for three colleges. And I tried to help him get into college. He goes, Dad, you never been to college. How are you going to help me? And I'm like, but who did he call? He called you. And you taught him how to get into college because you had experience of getting sober and applying for college and getting into college. I'll be forever grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You didn't just change my life. Man, you changed the course of my son's life. And our little ones are watching. Our little ones are watching. And that young man, he's finishing up his first year. He's in Manhattan in New York. He's a fashion and design major. He just got called him the other day. I don't know about you, but I have really like negative thinking about myself, right? It's hard losing your kid. That's how my perception is. I'm losing my kid. The reality is my kid sends me texts all day long. He sends me Instagram. We share things all day. We have an amazing relationship. But my perception is that I'm unlovable and I'm not good enough. That same little boy on the playground, huh? And he called me the other night, right? He said, this is his first call. He said, Dad, one of my friends is introducing me to her grandpa, who's best friends with the actor who played Harry Potter, and they want him to do fashion and design on Broadway, you know? Manufacturing BS. The reality is my life is absolutely beautiful. I have amazing friends. I have a beautiful home group. My sponsor's the best ever. You know what I mean? Like, I love my life. And if you're new, I hope that, this group's solid, but hope you find someone in here, right? Someone in here that's willing to tell you the truth, you know? Three sides of our triangle, unity, service, and recovery. And I could feel in this room tonight. And if I lived here, this would be my home group. I love you all. Thanks.